Welcome to NeuroStories, the podcast that highlights the people behind neuroscience at the Walton Centre. Together, we will lift the lid on the complex worlds of neurology and neurosurgery and everything in between, hearing fascinating tales of the incredible staff and services carried out in the hospital every day.
My name is Michael Jenkinson. I'm the Professor of Neurosurgery and Chair of Surgical Trials at the University of Liverpool and the Walton Centre.
What kind of areas are you covering in your day-to-day when you're at work at the Walton Centre?
My day-to-day practice really revolves around looking after people with brain tumours. So this is all types of brain tumours from the benign right through to the malignant and cancerous. I run a clinic and have operating theatre lists, so that's seeing new patients, making a diagnosis, operating on people, and then seeing them afterwards for their results and ongoing care.
So quite busy then?
So fairly busy, although my job is split half between the Walton Centre, so half NHS time and half at the university, half academic or research time.
So why neuro-oncology? Why brain tumours?
Well, when you start off training in neurosurgery, everyone thinks really of neurosurgery as brain surgery. One of the biggest proportions of work, particularly for brain or cranial neurosurgery, is people with brain tumours. So that's what really piqued my interest and that's what got me into it.
What was it about that area that sort of really made you go, like, wow, I need to do more than this?
I mean, brain tumours have a big impact on people's lives, all the way from the cancerous ones, where it's life-shortening, down to the non-cancerous or benign ones, where it can be life-altering in terms of quality of life. And really wanting to do the most to try and help people, particularly as the brain is you, it's yourself.
Is there something fascinating about a tumour, you know, how some can grow, how some move, how some come back?
Yeah, so there's a fundamental difference in the biology of these different types of tumours. As you say, some will regrow rapidly, some will be more indolent and slow growing and have better outcomes. Ultimately, the majority of them will need some form of surgical intervention. And you're trying to balance an operation that removes the tumour and helps people whilst minimising that neurological impact and harm for patients.
So where did it all start for you then? Where did you start your studies?
So I graduated from the University of Liverpool, really inspired to do neurosurgery after watching the film MASH, Donald Sutherland, and those surgeons looked like they had a great time looking after people, and there was a neurosurgeon character in it, and I thought, he looks like he's got a cool job. I think I'll have a go.
So Liverpool then, so you've really sort of worked in the city for most of your career, all of your career?
So I did my junior training jobs in Liverpool. I did my neurosurgery training in Liverpool. I went overseas and visited a few units on short observerships, but then ultimately came back to the city.
So what was it about the city then that was good for you as a neurosurgeon and as an academic?
The Walton Centre as a standalone neuroscience trust delivering neurology and neurosurgery is fantastic. Such great access to resources. You've got fantastic colleagues. The hospital is small enough that you can pretty much know everybody in the building, which I guess can be a double-edged sword. But generally, it's small enough that you know most people and it's a very friendly place to work.
So things can happen relatively quickly because, like you said, it's that community of professionals where you know people and you know, right, I need to go this way and talk to these people.
Yeah, definitely.
Tell me what a typical theatre day looks like for you.
So the actual day of theatre starts before then because you've got to do list planning and ensure the patient's appropriately worked up, consented and fit enough for surgery. We'll do a team brief about 8:30 in the morning where the whole theatre team meets, scrub staff, anaesthetist. We'll go through the day's list, explain how it's going to work, what the timings are likely to be. And then depending on the cases, we'll work through those and get the operating list done. hopefully within hours, but occasionally we have longer cases that will run on.
And what are the challenges around your job?
There's organisational challenges, so ensuring that everything is organised appropriately so patients know when to come in. You rely heavily on your clinical team and the supporting teams, you know, the specialist nurses, for example. I rely hugely on my secretary to keep me organised and keep me honest. Phenomenal asset to my clinical practice, that's for sure. So a lot of it is around organisation and the challenges of getting that sorted. And then challenges, particularly in theatres on the day, is you've got to work within that full wider team. So you've got to make sure that everyone's working towards a common goal, which is ultimately focused around the patient. They're the most important people on those particular clinical days. And you should all be focused around delivering good quality care for those people. What you realise is that you're making hundreds of decisions each day to get that theatre list done or to get that clinic delivered. And everyone's got to be working towards the same common goal, which is to get the operation done safely, patient recovered well, or to complete that clinic list where you've imparted news or given a diagnosis or reassured people waiting to come to see you. So you deserve to give them your full, you know, full and divided attention for those consultations. You also have to be aware that there are certain parts of the operation that require sort of hyper focus and much more concentration. And that's where you need the team to sort of be mindful and respectful of that. So no sort of chatting in the background.
Whilst they need to shut up.
Yeah, they need to shut up basically when you're doing what you're doing. And then other parts of the operation where it's much more relaxed and it can be a much more convivial atmosphere.
Almost like a journey from A to B, but there's those hairy moments through the gauntlet or whatever.
Yeah, you don't want people chatting as you're driving around the hairpin bends on a mountain road.
Yes, absolutely. So what would you say are the most rewarding parts of your job then?
Oh, the best thing is when you have a patient who comes in, you do a fantastic operation that achieves what your surgical goal is, whether that's to take it all out completely or to take a part of it out, but ultimately that leaves the patient neurologically unharmed and the patient goes home quickly and there are no complications. That is the most rewarding thing on a, you know, for a theatre case. We don't like excitement. Excitement is bad in neurosurgery. It usually means something's not going well. And when you see patients in clinics, you know, not it's not all bad news, but being able to reassure people. I mean, people are coming to clinic, they don't know what's going on, they have uncertainties, and most patients want to know, okay, this is my plan. I know what's going on now. Even though it may be good news or bad news, at least I have a plan and a clear trajectory of where I'm going with my health condition. So that's a very rewarding feel when you can give that expertise and information.
Because patients can come to you quite quickly, can't they? Like maybe they've gone to A&E or maybe their GP has urgently referred them.
Could be a matter of a few days that we see them in or a week or two, depending on what the urgency of that situation is. So for that time, patients will have had some information from their GP, from the referring hospital. But it's a time of great uncertainty and anxiety and worry for them. And the number of patients who come in and say, oh, thank goodness we're here to see you now. Okay, thank you. I know what's going on now. Even if you've told them it's, you know, a malignant or cancerous brain tumor and it's not curable, when the uncertainty goes, they're able to move forward with their sort of life planning and they know how to deal with the next steps.
Almost giving what the problem was the name that they can then go away and maybe just know what the plan can be.
Yeah, and they'll process that information better and it's so much easier for them and their sort of family and friends and supporting loved ones.
Okay, so we're going to do the quick fire round now. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
What would you be if you weren't a professor in neurosurgery?
Architect.
Ooh, why architect?
I love architectural design, interior design, buildings and spaces that make people feel good about themselves.
What's your biggest hobby?
I'm not sure I can confess that on this podcast.
That sounds quite mysterious.
The mystery will remain.
Favourite song?
Anything by Queen from the 1970s.
Favourite book?
Oh, that's a tricky one. I'm going through a phase of reading fantastic books about the railways written by Christian Wolmer. Very fascinating.
And favourite film?
Has to be MASH. Donald Sutherland.
Favourite animal?
Giraffe.
Dead or alive, who would you most want to have a drink with or take to dinner?
My wife, obviously.
I mean, textbook answer. What kind of food do you love?
Oh, Italian cuisine. Best in the world. Just good quality restaurants in Italy. Just find a local trattoria. It'll be fantastic.
Food you hate?
Marzipan and raisins. So no mince pies and no Christmas cake.
What's the best thing to have happened to you?
Meeting my wife? I said that was a question in my voice. Perhaps that's not the right answer.
I'm sensing a trend. Who's your hero?
Oh, I don't know if it's a hero as much, but Freddie Mercury, phenomenal musician and individual.
And something very few people know about you.
I lead a scout group.
You sure?
Positive.
How has neurosurgery, neuroscience changed over the course of your career, would you say?
We've gone from providing treatments to patients that may have been life-saving, but not necessarily giving people good quality of life. We've moved more towards providing treatments that are focused on quality of life and not necessarily quantity. And that's probably the biggest change in how we approach neurological conditions that I've seen during my training and my career. It's a focus on quality of life.
So that's really interesting then. So it's gone from where it's to try and take the tumour out maybe at any cost to what about the person who the tumour is in?
Correct, yeah. So it's all about the patient and their quality of life.
Are there any milestones that stand out for you?
Yeah, so there's lots of different ways of approaching that. So there's lots of clever techniques that have come along, so we can wake people up and map out specific brain activities. We can use technology that allows us to take out tumours more safely, sometimes more completely. For example, the intraoperative MRI scanner or the intraoperative ultrasound. So lots of technology that allow us to do surgery more effectively and more safely for patients.
Because I remember talking to you years ago about the pink drink, which is still being used.
Yeah, so that's commissioned by the National Health Service. So it's a drug that a patient drinks before surgery for certain types of brain tumours. And then we use an ultraviolet light on our operating microscope, and the tumour lights up pink. So it allows us to see where the tumour is and take more out.
That's fascinating, isn't it? It's literally like a roadmap to then go, it's this bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's good evidence to support using that. And that's used across the NHS, across Europe, and now across North America.
And you mentioned the IMRI. Is that a bit of a game changer, isn't it, in terms of shortening that length of stay in hospital?
Yeah, and I think it's got a clear set of indications. So there's the pink drink is great for certain types of tumours. The IMRI is better for other types of tumours, particularly lower grade ones or tumours where you can take a certain amount out, but you absolutely critically don't want to injure another part of the brain. So it allows you to really update that brain navigation and imaging so that you can do a much better operation.
I suppose it's the whole, while you're in the operation, the knowledge is power sort of. Yeah. The more you know about where you are in the brain.
Yeah, as soon as you have all this information before you start your operation, you start operating, and as soon as you take some tumour out, your navigation goes. So it's like driving along in a car, suddenly your sat-nav goes, and also you don't have a paper roadmap in the back of the car anymore. So being able to update your navigation during the operation, get your sat-nav back up and running is great for people having these operations.
So without that sort of ability to scan or image halfway through, before that, you would do your initial, we think we've got everything, and then what they'd need to recover?
Yeah, you think we've got everything, you do an scan afterwards and you say, oh, I thought we got everything, but we've missed this little bit here. So sometimes you might have to go and retake it out, or you might say, well, we can't take it out, or we don't want to do another operation for you because that's another risk for you. And so you might end up leaving small bits of tumor in that you could have otherwise taken out.
So much more efficient.
Much more efficient, yeah, definitely.
So where's neuroscience headed then from your perspective?
Oh, so I think there's a lot more personalized care coming along these days. So there's moves towards, instead of drugs that are just treating symptoms, to try and get drugs that are modifying how the diseases act. So a great example, not specifically neurosurgery, but malignant melanoma, for which we do see people with brain metastasis, so the cancer spread up to the brain, and we can still do our surgery and give some radiotherapy, but immunotherapy in that field has taken a terminal diagnosis for people with metastatic malignant melanoma to now you've got sort of long-term control rates and potentially cure rates of sort of 30%, 40%, 50% of people now, and that's been game-changing in the world of cancer broadly. And we see the benefits of that because people are living longer with that disease, and means we can treat their brain better and then get their brain disease under control.
Wow.
And I suspect we're going to see changes like this in other aspects of healthcare, and I think neuroscience will be up there as well.
And that's because of the developments in immunotherapy.
Yeah, and that's just better scientific knowledge, better biological knowledge, all driven by, good quality research underpinning it.
Is there anything in particular that you're excited for the future, or the future here at the Walton Centre?
So I think the Walton Centre is in a fantastic position from a clinical delivery perspective, high quality service across all aspects. But fantastic opportunities to build stronger links with the universities in the city, create a critical mass of academics in neurosurgery, expand the neurology academics as well. And we've got some really rising stars who are doing fantastic research in laboratories and running clinical trials. And the Walton Centre has the opportunity to consolidate its position and expand it, and not just be a national leader, but an international leader in some of these areas.
And tell me about some of the research that you do, because like you said, your half of your job is here at the Walton Centre, but it's also with the university as a professor as well.
Yeah, so I do a lot of clinical trials across different aspects of neurosurgery. One of the biggest trials we did was a trial called BASICS, which was all about brain shunts for hydrocephalus. I did this with my colleague in Alder Hey, Professor Connor Malucci. And this trial has changed practice in the NHS. So this showed that if you use an antibiotic impregnated shunt, it reduces your infection risk from 6% to 2%, saves the NHS about £7 million a year because you're not getting infections. We've looked at the UK data, and there's been a pretty much 100% switch of people using plain shunts to now using antibiotic shunts, and the infection rate remains low in the real world. So that's massive impact and practice changing.
Quite a satisfying thing as well.
From one single clinical trial. And we have to really thank the over 1,600 patients who were recruited nationally into this trial to help produce that data that proves this is the new standard of care, antibiotic shunts. Other things that we're doing, I'm running trials in a rare type of brain tumor called an atypical meningioma that's looking at surgery and monitoring versus surgery and radiotherapy to see if radiotherapy reduces the risk of it regrowing. And that we should have the results of that in 2026. Again, that's the first trial that's ever going to be done worldwide in that particular condition asking that question. So that has the potential again to be practice changing and influencing guidelines and how we manage people in the future.
Does that motivate you?
Yeah, I mean, if you're a doctor, you generally can look after one person at a time with one clinical encounter. By doing research, you have the potential to change practice that will influence the care of hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of patients.
Like nationally into the future.
Into the future as well. So that's what research does. It changes or establishes the best evidence for certain treatments that can influence, that can affect, help many, many people.
Finally, what are your main takeaways then for anyone listening to this?
Yeah, I mean, neurosurgery is a fantastic specialty. Once people, get over the fact that they don't really believe you, you are actually a brain surgeon. So that's quite cool in and of itself. But ultimately, it's a privilege trying to help people and help improve the lives of people whose brains are affected, because that is who they are, and that is their self, is their person. You know, that's what we're trying to help.
Thank you for listening to NeuroStories. You can listen to more episodes on Spotify and stay up to date with the latest news and events from the hospital on our social media channels at The Walton Centre on Facebook and Instagram, and at Walton Centre on X. Got feedback? Email the communications team at wcft.communications@nhs.net. This podcast was recorded, edited, and hosted by Sam Fleet from the Walton Centre's communications team.